Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talks and Tales. You're joined by Daisy and Tess. You're here for another episode, and we are going to talk enrichment today. So we're pretty excited about that. But first of all, Daisy, how are you? How's your day been?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. We are getting stuck into breeding season at work, so it's been very busy collecting a variety of different nesting materials for our little blues. They do generally enter their breeding season adjacent to when they molt, which happens throughout the summer months. So normally our colony starts breeding season around sort of May through to about September, October time. So it is a really exciting time of year for us, and a very exciting time for the penguins, of course, as well. So I particularly love this time of year at work as well. So it's nice and fun. And this week as well, we booked a couple of fun trips. So I'm going to be heading down to Coffs Coast Wildlife Sanctuary with a couple of the girls from work. So I'm going to be seeing all of their beautiful Australian sea lions, the dolphins, the penguins that they have down there, and meeting their beautiful new seal pup, Gary, I think his name is, which is going to be amazing. And then I took Jimmy's advice from last episode and have booked a flight to Sydney. So I'm going to go down to Taronga with one of my girlfriends and hang out there. So keeping myself busy with a couple of animal-y kind of base trips over the next couple of months, which would be good.
Sounds good. I'll live vicariously through
you. Yeah. How about you, Tess? How is living the best life of maternity leave?
Yeah, it's good. I love it. It's nice to basically have big plants, get a cup of tea, have a sit. You know, lots of jobs on.
No, eating a lot of sugar.
Oh, yeah, geez. No, today I actually returned my uniforms and my key to Lone Pine. So it was kind of nice to walk around as a guest, which you don't usually do. And I had the opportunity to interact with the tree kangaroo, see him come down, and that was nice too. So it's a very different perspective when you're working and not working. So I had a really nice day today, actually. It was great.
That's
but speaking
good.
Of Lone Pine, our guest today did actually work at Lone Pine with me. His name is Blake, and he is an absolute legend. And we're going to chat enrichment. So should we get straight into this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, Blake, thank you so much for joining us. It's really exciting to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Stoked to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you both.
I know you're a bit advocate for Train Talks and Tales, so we love to finally have you on. As you would have heard, because you've listened to every single one of our episodes, we always start with our fast five. Are you cool if we jump straight into that?
Yes, please do. Yeah, keen.
All right, let's do it. Number one, kites or falcons?
Kites.
Italian food or Chinese food?
Oh, Italian.
Macropods or buffalo?
Buffalo, I guess.
South Australia or Queensland?
Oh, Queensland's good.
And last question, egg sandwiches, yes or no?
Oh, it depends. Yeah.
All right, nicely done. Depends on the egg or depends on the sandwich?
Well, there's so much, yeah, I suppose if it's just eggs in a sandwich, but like if you've got other stuff going on, depends on the egg as well, I suppose. But no, nah, started out good. A couple of those were thrown under the bus kind of questions, but we got there in the end.
All right, well, Blake, thank you again for joining us. We always love to know a little bit more about our guests, and you've been in the zoo industry for about 6 years now, and I obviously had the pleasure of working with you very briefly at Lone Pine for a year or so before you went gallivanting back up to the territory. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey as a zookeeper?
Yeah, for sure. It's been good. It's been a lot, long 6 years. It's been a cool 6 years. Like, I started out on Kangaroo Island. I got my first break into zookeeping at Raptor Domain on Kangaroo Island, worked there for about 2.5 years with the Raptors and learning from Dave Irwin, which was excellent, one of the sort of front runners in Raptors, especially in South Australia. And then I went to the Territory, which was great. Worked at the Territory Wildlife Park for about 8 months, and then decided to go back to Kangaroo Island to try sort of redo that, because I had left during COVID and sort of it was all over the shop. But it was nice to go back and sort of tie up loose ends and that kind of thing. Then I spent about 7 months there, then went up to North Queensland, up in Port Douglas, worked up at Wildlife Habitat with just parrots, and I broke into a bit of mammal stuff up there and then rehabilitation stuff as well, which was excellent to sort of dip my toes in that kind of thing. And then about 7 months again later, down to Lone Pine, which was an excellent time back on the Raptors, which was great. Got to meet you and work on the Raptors team, which is excellent there. Great bunch of people and animals to work with, which I absolutely love. And then decided to go back to the Territory for another redo. And see how that goes. So currently working as a buffalo and dingo keeper at the Territory Wildlife Park.
Been bouncing around a lot, mate.
Yeah, a bit of everything, a bit all over the shop. But we'll see what happens, where I go next.
No, that's so interesting to hear all the different places and different states and parts of Australia that you've visited. From listening to that, I gather that you've mainly, I guess, worked with raptors, but working as a buffalo keeper, is that what you said at the Territory? We have never really talked about a buffalo keeper, so what does your sort of role look like?
It's great to talk about, because it's very new to me as well. I felt like I'd developed, after about 5 years or so working mainly with raptors and birds, to just sort of go straight back to like square one, almost like not knowing any how they operate, like as a species, as an animal, like macro mammals in general are just I've not really dealt with a lot. Buffalo, if people aren't familiar, ungulates, so hoofed mammals, they're ruminants. So it's all this different kind of stuff goes into their care, which has been an excellent learning opportunity for me, particularly with, what goes into caring for them, enrichment, which I absolutely love, and trying to work different ways enrichment into their lives. Basically I just feel like a bit of a cowboy in some days, just working the cattle in the yards. It's not like that, and I'm not calling myself one, but it feels completely different. Like, it's protected contact, which is the biggest thing for me. I've always been used to touching the animals, working exceptionally close with them and building those relationships. And it is completely different when I have to stand on the other side of a fence, getting the animals to come to me, participate in different things, health checks and that kind of stuff. You can't go to them. They have to come to you. And that has been one of the biggest things, just that kind of, disconnect almost.
Yeah, a bit different to just whipping up a leather glove and having them fly to you. That's pretty cool. I think that's a big opportunity, because often we do have maybe a favourite taxa or species or interest, and obviously yours was raptors. So cool that you've dabbled in something else now and have to learn a whole new ball game. So I feel like that would have been an interesting few months for you.
For sure. It was good. It's been hard at times, I love raptors and that kind of thing, but it's been excellent to sort of see things from another perspective and then learn from that, and I've just really enjoyed the whole sort of experience, to be fair.
Broadening horizons. Well, you mentioned before that you obviously love enrichment, and that's why we've got you on today. My favorite thing about working with you, Blake, was your absolute passion for enrichment. I've never met anyone who's so in love with enrichment and so involved. The amount of effort and consideration and passion you put in was just really remarkable, and I really appreciated that. And I was telling Daisy before, you would honestly come in with like a giant box bigger than your body, full of all these different things that you wanted to experiment with, like different textiles and boxes and paper mache balls that you've made, puzzles, hand carved like wooden objects and that kind of thing. You really put my paper bonbons to shame with your dedication. But I loved it, and it was really inspiring. And I feel like since you've left Lone Pine, I have tried to embody that same enthusiasm for enrichment. So I thank you for that. But with that, why is enrichment so important to you, and why is providing quality enrichment something that you've been so invested in?
Yeah, thanks. I'll take a breath before I talk about this for like a bull out the gate with my sort of intro about where I've been. I just want to shove it all, like, oh, this podcast could go on for, yeah, too long if I talk about everything. But, yeah, I'll talk a bit slower and I'll get cut the best parts out. So I'll leave them in. Anyway, I love enrichment so
we'll
much.
We'll cut that because, up.
Yeah. All right, sweet. Because, yeah, just the animal, like, I guess I've always been keen on animals and working with them and that kind of thing. What I, like, I'm not, yeah, saying that I'm an expert in anything. Everything that I've done, there's some science-based stuff behind it from what I've learned myself and been told. But otherwise, a lot of my stuff is sort of how you're going and learning as I go, which has been excellent for personal development. Like, I'd leave work and, like, you go home, you, yeah, walk the dogs, you read a book, you watch Netflix, you do all this kind of stuff. The animals are still at the park or wherever you're working, and what are they doing? So you want to make the time that you've got with them so enriched, basically. Give them everything you can, because there's so much time of your day that's filled with things going on and you're mentally stimulated. But to, yeah, the 7.5 hours that most of us are employed, that's when the animals are getting attention. But there's still a lot of daylight where not much is probably going on. So, yes, environmental, like the environments that they're in and what you've given them as an exhibit and a habitat to live in, that is a big deal. But at the end of the day, like, if you can make things to make feeding take a bit longer, or during the day, social enrichment is really important between you and the animal, or between the animals of the same species, different species, that kind of thing. I just love the fact that not only can you work with the animals and have a great day, but just go that extra mile, really. Just push that a bit further and just get squeeze the lemon and get as much juice out of it as possible, basically. I wouldn't want to just sort of, walk in, here's your food, here's your water with your animal, and then go home. Like, I just want to make sure that they're number one. That's why you're there, basically, why we all should be there.
I think you summed that up really beautifully, and it's so clear that you're so passionate about enrichment, Blake, like we all should be. And I think it's really cool that you kind of reflected on the time that we get to spend with those animals, because we had a conversation with Jamie, who works with elephants in the UK, and they mentioned about how they've started utilizing 24-hour surveillance so that they can see what their animals are up to all the time. And until we see that within all of our facilities, it's so important that we're utilizing the time that we're actually with them to provide them the best care and best welfare that we can. And that is through such a variety of things, but enrichment is such a huge part of that. So I hope that we start to see facilities, looking at it on a longer scale over the day. But for now, we definitely want to be aiming high with enrichment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And the amount of effort, like I mentioned before, that you put in, I'm talking, he hand carved like a wooden fish for the Brahmani kite and the sea eagle. And he did engrave his name Blake on it. But like, that's just so cool. Like, that's not something you've made in a couple of minutes. It's in your own time making this amazing enrichment item and this paper mache. Like, paper mache takes ages, man. Like, it's awesome. And it's cool to see that, these are activities that they're not just going to do within a couple of seconds. They will have a lot of engagement in that item. So, it's good to see. I think you summed that up well.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, Blake, though, that we could maybe, as keepers, be better in providing more quality enrichment to our animals?
Oh, we could all be, better. Like, in an ideal world, like, even myself, like, there's always growth that can occur. And I love so many quotes in zookeeping. One of them that I really like is, you do the best you can. I think this has been on the podcast before. I've heard it at a conference or something like that. But you do the best you can until you know better. And then when you know better, you do better. So as long as you're continuously growing and you're doing the best you can, like some facilities, I've been really lucky to work at a whole heap of different places. So I've seen places that have got more time than others and places that have got less time, less staff, that kind of thing. And some people do the best they can, others not so much. But when you come down to the keeper interaction and that kind of thing, if you can do the best you can, I'd love to see enrichment in any capacity. Some places can do enrichment schedules and enrichment logs and how did the animal interact with this? And some places, as long if you just chuck a scrunched up piece of newspaper in with that animal, it's still, in my opinion, better than nothing. Like, you can get really organized with it and try and come at it really science-based, but at the end of the day, like, do what you can, basically. Like, yeah, if you can make it a little bit better, or you can, yeah, science-based would be excellent if we could all do that, but we can't. So at the end of the day, basically do what you can is something that I'd push to a lot of people all around the place, really, until it becomes a standard that we have to employ. Just like you have to feed the animal this, you have to do clean their aviary, or you have to clean their habitat, you have to give them food and water, you have to give them enrichment. That'd be, yeah, excellent if that comes to it one day. And I hope it does.
Yeah, absolutely. We're kind of changing the narrative a bit more to be like, yes, food, water, shelter, training, enrichment. Like, we need to change this a little bit to include that as well. And yeah, I agree. I think any effort is good, but we can always aim higher. And you also used to love the, you know, your quality of work is their quality of life. And that's just so good. Hey, that's 10 out of 10 quote, really. And that's something that I know that you really resonate with. Now, you mentioned obviously your passion for enrichment, and you actually presented last year at the ASNK conference in Cronulla about the implementation of an enrichment program at TWP, or Territory Wildlife Park. You spoke about this with so much passion, and honestly, it was a real tearjerker. Blake, you got me. You think we could? Can you tell us a little bit more about that presentation?
Yeah, for sure. I almost cried myself. It was a fantastic milestone for me, because I try and I bring the animals with me. Like, yeah, oh, cry right now. But I just love them so much, because at times they've been all I've had at some points, and so I want to do the very best by them. So it's been an honor for me to learn from them, and basically the love that I get from them and the enjoyment and everything that they give me, if I can give it back in the form of enrichment and that kind of thing, well, that's the way I've found to be able to give it back, then that's fantastic. So I've learned a lot, yeah, the different facilities that I, like I've said earlier, but otherwise taking that to the Territory Wildlife Park, that was a place that had, it was really haphazardly done. If you've not, yeah, seen the recording or anything like that, it is available on the website, the ASZK website. So you go check it out if you'd like to, but otherwise it was fantastic to go from haphazardly, that kind of what I was speaking of earlier, throwing a newspaper ball, this, that. Enrichment was getting done, but there was time to be able to raise it up to that higher standard. And so being able to liaise with veterinary staff and general manager of life sciences and work through that, what works, what doesn't, individual based reactions as well, like the barn owl siblings. Even there was two barn owls, brother and sister, and the way that they interacted with a piece of corn husk was completely different. Like, catering to the individual is fantastic, and what they've taught me through providing enrichment was excellent. Being able to share that with people from around Australia was awesome. I remember if I can go off tangent a little bit, sitting on Kangaroo Island in my little one-bedroom unit, and I'd read the ASZK magazines, and I'd look at and listen and look on Instagram at all these people putting these things out into the zookeeping community. And for me to be able to do that and basically represent the animals that I'd worked with was incredible. So heartwarming, really.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, no, I definitely kind of want to watch back on that, because Tess spoke really, really highly of your presentation. And I like how you're talking about trying, and because I think one of the biggest things people use as an excuse is probably time. And I can appreciate that time is quite rare with working in this industry, but being able to provide something is better than providing nothing, as long as it's enriching and not aversive for the animal, of course. And recently at Sea Life, we've actually tried looking at setting behavioral goals through our enrichment. So every day we have a different behavioral goal that we want to see done via our enrichment program. So whether that's foraging, grooming, social interaction, net positive with an object, all different things. And that's been really great to give us, it's kind of made us really think a little bit outside of the box of new things that we need to be doing and not just relying on our ideas and the things that we're kind of really used to from using in the past. So it's been a really great tool to get us creative.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's really important. Like you just said at the start, like, yeah, there's that line that you want to hit an enrichment target. You want to give the animal something in some cases, but you don't want it to just be ticking a box or, oh, we've done this and it becomes a problem or adverse to the animal. So yeah, really important to understand and figure out what that means for different individuals before you just start throwing stuff around.
I also appreciated that you put a lot of effort into that presentation. There was like copious amounts of examples of what you'd use, what worked, what hadn't, ideas, resources, and you provided that for people as well. Like you were like, this is all this documentation if you'd like to have a look at it. And it was cool to see just, you know, 25 zookeepers sign up for that document off you. And that's 25 more keepers that are inspired or basically making a bit of a change. So you should be proud of yourself for that effort. I really like to see that, that's for sure.
Yeah, thank you. It felt great to have people want to like see what that was all about. And I suppose if anyone does, I can put a link in with the Trainer Talks and Tales or whatever platforms it goes on and that kind of stuff. Or it's on my Instagram as well, free to anyone basically. Everything that I've done over the last 5 years, is available just for free use to anyone who wants to have a gander. And if you can get anything from it, fantastic. Otherwise, at the very least, it's cute pictures of animals playing with enrichment. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, we definitely should. I feel like sharing's caring in this industry, so we should definitely make that public for everyone to be able to see. Blake, though, do you have any tips at all for some keepers who might be looking at broadening their horizon a little bit in terms of providing more options for enrichment for whatever species that they're caring for?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I suppose when I first started out, if you're going from, the ground up and you're feeling, it can feel very overwhelming for all of it. And speaking from personal experience, really, for training and enrichment and that kind of thing, basically, if you can, I Googled like whatever species or whatever sort of taxon and group you're working with. I typed in, for example, raptor, a taxon advisory group into Google, and that comes with a huge range of information from all over the globe, different animals interacting in different parts of the world and that kind of thing. If you type in that animal, whatever you're doing, and the taxon advisory group, that can be a really big help. I suppose starting locally as well can be really important. You don't know what the volunteer you're working alongside, the knowledge that they might have. You don't know your co-workers, your managers, anything like that. They could have menageries of information inside their heads that you just need to ask a question and you could get this absolute floodgate opened of knowledge from people that you might not even suspect to have that knowledge. So ask around. Don't take anyone as just for granted, really. Make sure that you ask around, learn from that. Otherwise, there's so many, they're hidden away. They're not in plain sight. But otherwise, if you go on to different Instagram pages and Google about enrichment and that kind of stuff, people are putting out some excellent stuff for the species you might be working with. And some of my favorite stuff is people even enriching invertebrates as well. So like putting out bits of sphagnum moss for giant millipedes and that kind of thing. Don't think that because you're working with just any species that they don't need to be enriched or they're less than, because if you can make a millipede's day by giving it some sphagnum moss, like why wouldn't you, basically?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's so cute. Thank you for sharing some of those tips, Blake. I really hope that people get a lot out of your experience and your knowledge all around enrichment. We do have a few questions from our listeners though, so we're going to get stuck into those questions. Question number one was, what has been for you the most effective form of enrichment for raptors that you've worked with?
Oh, that's a good one. With raptors, I think basically the most effective is also the most simple, really. Newspaper pom-poms I absolutely love. Like scrunching up a newspaper ball can get torn apart pretty easily. But there's little newspaper pom-pom that you can make. It's just newspaper. It holds really well. There's no staples or sticky tape or anything like that involved. But eliciting that sort of grabbing, you get a tactile sort of side of things with them grabbing it. You can put pieces of food in there. It's got quite a bit of strength to it and that kind of thing. They get that tearing behavior like they're plucking prey. If I could choose one piece of enrichment to give the rest of my life. It'd be that the newspaper pom poms, really. I think they're so effective and they're really easy ones to make. So I'd go with that for any raptor, really.
Yeah, I loved them. I couldn't believe how sturdy or like hardy they are, because obviously, like you said, a newspaper ball can get ripped up within a couple of seconds, boom, done. But those pom-poms were really, yeah, really sturdy, and I was impressed. So you'll have to take a photo of one and then we'll put it up on our socials. Maybe you could do a little like how to make a pom-pom, because I'm sure there's lots of different species who would love
videos,
them.
Yeah, I'll have to, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Because they're so good, like you said, so way better than, yeah, anything else, really.
All right, well, number two was advice on how to get raptors that are not used to human interaction or flighty to interact with enrichment. So obviously, you mentioned before you've done a bit of work at raptor rehab facilities. What was the go there in terms of introducing enrichment to those kind of more hands-off birds?
Yeah, for sure. So for that kind of thing, and I volunteered up in North Queensland with a wildlife organisation, which was, yeah, fantastic, wildlife and raptor, yeah, Care Queensland. Those raptors were getting released back into the wild, and so that basically is your first question. If you're not releasing those animals back into the wild, you could do, I think, a lot of different stuff, but if you're releasing them back into the wild, it was just natural stuff that we were using, because those birds couldn't fly as well or something had happened to them for them to be in care. Pine cones were an excellent one for hiding food and that kind of stuff. Leaf litter, little sort of trays and areas where leaf litter was hiding. Mealworms for smaller species, larger bits of meat for larger species and that kind of thing. Fish going in ponds for osprey, and they'd have to dive and grab stuff if it was just a fillet or a dead fish and stuff like that. So I think it really does depend, like, on who you're working with, what species it is, and what the intention is for that species. You could take your time working in and integrating this more science-based and novel enrichment items for species that you're keeping in a collection. But otherwise, if they're going back to the wild, I think potentially even the best enrichment you can give them is very little human contact, and making sure that they stay wild and afraid would be the best case for them, really.
Yeah, good answer.
Yeah, definitely. We have a cheeky third question for you, Blake, and you can thank your good friend Anna Martins for this question. So to wrap it up with a little bit of fun, what is going to win, a sea eagle or a white-tailed eagle?
Well, it depends what you
do. I don't know what she means either.
For looks or... No, with Anna Martins. Who knows? I guess.
She sent us about 32, so we just chose one.
I can imagine. I was waiting for Anna Martins' question. Who knows? For looks, Anna, then it'll be a sea eagle. Wedge tails, I don't know, they're stronger. I think they'd put up more of a fight. If you're talking about calls, the seagulls have got not a great call. Wedge tails have got a better call. Neither of them are the best, but who knows? I don't know. Flip a coin and whatever it lands on, basically.
I feel like if you were talking about the residents at Lone Pine, that you'll probably choose the wedge tailed eagles and not the ones that don't like boys.
You put a lady's wig on and you're pretty sweet. I've done that.
I have seen that photo of you, Blake.
Yeah, and if you're looking around, there's photos of me with seagulls, and if that's what it takes to make friends with a seagull, I'm can't stop me.
100%.
Oh, what a note to end it on. Oh, so good. Well, Blake, thank you so much for joining us. As I mentioned, you were a pleasure to work with, and your enthusiasm, your passion for enrichment was palpable, and I really appreciated that. So thank you for joining us, and it's great to have you on.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity. Daisy and Tess, it's been great. Long time listener and being able to be on the other side of it, it's fantastic, and I feel so, yeah, heartwarmed, honoured, and it's great. Can't wait to see where this goes.
Well, thank you for supporting us for all this time as well. We're very grateful for you, and I really hope a lot of people get a lot out of this episode. So thank you again, Blake. Blake was so much fun to chat to today, Tess, and, you know, so passionate and so excited about enrichment. And I hope everyone can take a little bit of his passion and his excitement and put it into your daily day-to-day with all of the animals that you guys get to work with. And, you know, Blake just touched the surface. We are so excited to dive into enrichment so much more and chat about a whole lot of different things. So we hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys. Enjoy the rest of your week. Bye.